where we go off the rails is how we try to restore ourselves to Genesis 1 and 2, that we can't achieve that ourselves. Like, we can't fix what was broken in Genesis 3. And that is why Jesus came, to respond to that heart cry, because he is the only one who can heal it.
Today on the show, we have Dr. Sharon Miller, who is the author of 3 books, Free of Me, Nice, and The Cost of Control. Her and her husband, co-pastor and lead Bright City Church, a church plant in Durham, North Carolina. And they are amazing. I have just been so moved by their work and her ministry. And so it's a gift to have you on the show today, Sharon. Thank you for being here and joining us on the But I Tell You podcast.
Yes. I'm excited.
Awesome. Thanks for making space. And I'm excited to hear a bit more about your own formation journey, your own spiritual formation when it comes to this concept of control. And was curious, kind of in your own formation, how would you say, you know, you had heard it said?
Yeah, I love the premise of this show, especially because that is such a beautiful teaching technique that Jesus uses to get us to rethink assumptions. And for me, the idea that God is in control is something that I've really been on a journey with, not because he isn't in control, but the way that I had been formed around control was I had a very narrow category that it was handed to me as basically, this is a sin, that you struggle with control because you have pride.
Yeah.
And if you are wrestling with control, then you need to just let go and let God, so to speak. You know, Yes. You need to just surrender to him. And the problem with that framework is it did not help me at all.
Darn it. Oh, it seems like it should have just worked, right? Like, that would have been easy.
Like, you know? Yeah. Like, when you're being told in the middle of a situation that you need to stop trying to control, I don't think that has helped anyone ever.
Yeah. It's like someone saying, just relax, right? Like, it's like the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's been a journey for me of realizing that there is a more helpful way of thinking about our relationship with control. And just to give a little bit of background, like where I even came to this in the first place was, I guess it's been almost 5 years ago now, watching my church, watching Christians online respond to the pandemic. And, you know, anytime there's a storm of any sort, it has this exposing effect, kind of like when a storm sweeps through a forest and the dead trees, the weak branches, all that are broken off. It exposes the weak places. And I felt like the pandemic did a really good job of exposing a lot in the church. But one of those things was our addiction to control and our intolerance for uncertainty. And so as a pastor, it was something that I realized, okay, we need to do some discipleship around this. We need to examine this. Also thinking, not me though, like,
yeah, just like we, those people, that kind of thing, like the church.
Like, yeah. I'm good. I'm not a control freak. You know, I was always very judgy about my friends who, when their child started kindergarten and it was like a 5-alarm emergency because they, you know, had control issues. I was very judgy about it. But as I went on this journey of understanding why do we wrestle with control in the first place, tracing it all the way back to Genesis 3, that moment where, you know, God has put this boundary around Adam and Eve's will. And what they do when they reach to eat of that fruit is they're defying that boundary on their will. And that's what we're doing anytime we try to control something that God has not given us control over. There's a boundary around our power and our will, and we're trying to actively defy that. But what was really helpful for me to understand, and this was the big paradigm shift for me personally, is realizing that moment, it rewrote all of creation. You know, the blueprint of humanity, of creation, now has sin running through it. And because of that, we as descendants of Adam and Eve, we're now doomed to reenact that moment over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That any time we reach for control, reach for knowledge, you know, that's the most common way we actually try to exercise control is through knowledge. But anytime we do that, we're just reenacting that moment. But what we're also reenacting is not just that moment, but its consequences. Because immediately after that moment, we see shame, we see division, you know, we see anxiety. And what I realized studying that is that now there's this inextricable relationship between control and those consequences very wow. specifically. That is now written into creation and there aren't any loopholes. And the problem with control is we think there are loopholes. We think I'm controlling the situation for their good. You know, like I know what's best for them. Or we just rebrand it entirely. Like I'm not controlling them. I'm helping them.
Yeah,
you know,
we make
that
it
sort of a thing.
Sacred or sanctify it a little bit, that kind of
exactly,
thing.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But it was really helpful for me to realize, you know, I can try and justify this to myself as much as I can, but I can't escape this truth that now exists in the world that every time I try to control something that God has not given me control over, it now comes with a cost. It comes with a cost. And there's no escaping that. And that's a very different way of thinking about control in contrast with, you know, you shouldn't try to control. God's in control. Just trust him. Now I'm asking a different question. Say, for example, when I'm having conflict with my husband, because
theoretically,
you know,
as a married person, theoretically.
because we lead a church together.
Yeah.
And so our disagreements are not just about, you know, the shower curtain, like, do you like the shower curtain? You know, that kind of a thing. It's like and not even sometimes disagreements about parenting. Sometimes we're disagreeing about the vision and direction of the church.
Yeah.
And when that happens, it is very easy for me to rebrand control, you know, to go into that like fight to win. And I justify it to myself because it's like kingdom stakes, you know,
oh, yeah.
It's like eternity is
really
hanging
yeah.
in the balance
about?
Of
yeah.
me winning this debate with my husband. And now I think about it very, very differently, where I realize in those moments where I'm trying to strong arm my husband, where I'm really trying to control him, the question is not whether or not I should control him, but is it worth the cost? Because it is going to cost my marriage. And the answer is no.
Wow.
It's never worth the cost, especially because, you know, the church, honestly, we love our church, but the church can come and go. You know, our church could have any pastors, but my husband only has one wife. And so
yeah.
that's always the priority for me. And so that was a really, really important paradigm shift for me in terms of taking the should off of control because God's in control, not us. That just, I don't think is helpful to people in the heat of the moment. But for me now thinking, what will it cost me? Not will it cost me, but what will it cost me? And is it worth that cost?
Yeah, man, there's so much there that I want to hit so many different things. The first is just identifying the cost, you know, how, you know, first of all, just hearing you say, hey, I realize this isn't an option, that I, you know, there is a trade-off here. Like I get to choose this or that in the context of control or faith even, you know, or trust or something along those lines or relationship. And so what would you say, you know, you discovered about how to discover the cost, you know, so, it's one thing to say in the garden, you know, this costs humanity for eternity. It's another thing to say, I don't even realize I'm doing it because I'm fighting for the kingdom at the expense mm-hmm. of my marriage, or, you know, I'm fighting on this principle to be right yeah. at the expense of the relationship. You know, what would you say?
Yeah. So there's two primary indicators. I mean, there's others, but the ones that I really notice the most, the first is anxiety in yourself.
Wow.
You know, one of the first articulations of the consequences of sin in Genesis 3 is Adam hiding. And he says that he's hiding not because he's ashamed, but because he's afraid. And so this is the first appearance of fear in the Bible. Wow. And so that's a really important indicator for us that anxiety is a sign that we are trying to control something that we actually don't have control over. And I think we miss it because it's a little bit of a paradox. Like when we feel anxiety, we often run to control to soothe our anxiety. But what ends up happening is it just makes it worse. So for example, I had a couple years ago, I had to have a biopsy done.
Wow.
And this was after I'd already written a book on control. That's also very convicting.
Yeah, nothing makes you feel in control like a biopsy. So
to write, well, just writing a book on control and then like in situations like this where you realize that you're doing like the thing that you wrote and told people not to do.
Hundreds of pages about.
So I have this biopsy done and they, you know, in your chart, I don't know if you have the same thing, but in my like medical chart online in the app, they upload pictures of all the scans, the ultrasounds, everything. And I don't even know why no one needs to see those. Like if you're not a doctor, you don't need to see those things. But I'm looking at these while I'm waiting for my biopsy results to come back. And, you know, what do I do? Do I just close the app and, you know, hand it over to the Lord because there's nothing I can do, you know, while I wait for the results of the biopsy? No, of course not. What I do instead is I start Googling, comparing the pictures on my chart to pictures of malignant tumors online.
Oh, my goodness.
To see if I can figure out if I have cancer.
Yeah.
And the answer is no, you can't figure it out. That's why they do a biopsy. It's because you can't figure it out like from the pictures. But I'm sitting there, you know, on the internet looking and just freaking out because that's what, you know, you feel a pain in your elbow and you go to WebMD and again, you're seeking knowledge to give you a sense of control over this situation. But has anyone ever walked away from WebMD feeling like, you know what, it's going to be okay, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone has ever, anyone, you know, ever you, always, this is, yeah. You always walk away from WebMD feeling worse. You're like, I'm dying, you know? And so in the moment when I was looking at all these images on the internet, I could feel the anxiety just rising in my chest. And thankfully, because I had written a book on this, I had that thought, okay, you're doing this to yourself right now. Like because of the way, because you're trying to control the situation, you're trying to get certainty and predictability, you're going to something to give you peace, which cannot give you peace. And so you're actually forfeiting any peace that is available to you in Christ. But that has been really helpful to me in situations that feel out of control is, you know, control isn't always the cause of anxiety, but it definitely makes it worse. And so in those moments where I feel anxiety, that's a good cue. Okay, am I feeling this way because I'm trying to control something that I cannot control? And another example is leading a church, you know, with people in your church who disagree with you. You can wake up in the middle of the night thinking about all the things that you want to say to them. And again, this does not help at all. It doesn't give us any peace at all. And so whenever I'm feeling that anxiety at like 2 a.m., it cues me in, oh, this is like a control response that you're feeling right now. And so I would say anxiety is a really good indicator. And then another, this isn't necessarily a red light. It's much more anticipatory. But the connection between control and broken relationships has been extremely prohibitive for me. I already mentioned my relationship with my husband. And we see as soon as Adam and Eve, you know, reach for control, the fallout is brokenness between God, but also brokenness between one another. And it's because whenever we try, specifically when we try to control another person, it will break our relationship with them. Mm. And one of the reasons we also know that this is true is because in Genesis 1 and 2, God is in control, but he is not controlling.
Yeah.
And that distinction is really important, that there's this mysterious balance between his sovereignty and our free will, that he wants to preserve our agency. And so if that is true for God, then all the more so it is true for us that if we try to control people, something which God himself does not do, it is going to break our relationship with them. And that has really sobered me. It's sobered me in my marriage.
Yeah.
It's also been sobering as a parent, because I obviously am given to my kids to discipline them, to shepherd them, to guide them, to teach them, to protect them, all of those things. But I have not been commissioned to control them. And if I don't honor that distinction, it is going to break my relationship with them. But the thing that is so, this is the thing that like keeps me on my knees, is you won't know that brokenness is there for like 10 to 15 years. And so that has also, even though you might not see the immediate impact of broken relationships, just knowing this is the impact has really caused me to take a step back.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. There's so much that is insightful in terms of, you know, this relationship, it sounds like, on one hand with knowledge and how we think it will give us control, and then like maybe perspective about how, you know, this will damage our relationships if we do in fact try to hold on to control, whether it's through knowledge or through its various forms. You know, that example with the kids obviously is very personally convicting with three kids. One of the things I always joke about is, you know, they will be in therapy. It's just a matter of, you know, which thing I cause, and it'll probably not be the thing that I think. And
yep.
There was this moment in your book where you mentioned, it reminded me of Hebrews 11, where talking about kind of faith that is in uncertainty, you know, and in not knowing, right? Faith that is hope in what is unseen, or, you know, confident assurance, yet that God is sovereign and
yeah,
that God is on the throne without knowing, you know, or maybe the same in our relationships with others. You know, what would you say, you know, or how would you encourage other people to not just embrace that, like the hard truth of not knowing everything, because that sure makes me feel like I can get some control if I just know a little bit more, you know, what are things that like practically, you know, you can lean into this, like ways that you feel like we're invited into, into not chasing the tree of the knowledge of good and evil or something, or, you know, eating from its fruit, or, you know, not destroying our relationships through control, you know?
So the first thing that comes to mind is just naming that control offers itself to us as sort of a false gospel. And so it cannot deliver what it promises, and it ends up robbing us in the end, because that having certainty in the character of God instead of our circumstances is, that takes faith. That takes like growing that muscle of faith. And whenever we choose control instead, we're sort of letting that muscle of faith atrophy.
Yeah.
And so just that's one thing that kind of came to mind. The other thing that I do always want to say, going back to what I mentioned at the beginning, that a lot of us only have a category of control as being sin, that this is about pride, that you want to be in the driver's seat instead of God, you know, idolatry of the self, whatever it is, it's kind of a shaming category. But I think it's really important to speak a word of grace to people who do struggle with control, because the reason why we struggle with control is that we live in this post-Genesis 3 world, but we were created for Genesis 1 and 2.
Yeah.
We were created for stability. We were created for security. We were created for wholeness and health and all of those things. And so with control, very often I think what is happening is our souls are crying out for that which God put in us and what he created us for.
Yeah.
And so to not necessarily, I think you can sort this out with God and your community, but to not necessarily think I struggle with control because this is just sin. It could be that you have an adult child who is making really destructive decisions and your desire to sort of snatch them out of the jaws of destruction is not pride. That
yeah.
I think that actually reflects the heart of God.
Like bringing back into order something that's really disordered and broken.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Where we go off the rails is how we try to restore ourselves to Genesis 1 and 2, that we can't achieve that ourselves. Like we can't fix what was broken in Genesis 3. And that is why Jesus came to respond to that heart cry, because he is the only one who can heal it. And so that is always a grace and a mercy that I want to speak over anyone who would maybe describe themselves as a control freak and feel kind of bad about it. To say that, you know, shame does not need to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah. And there's so much help in that because I could see the temptation on both sides to be ashamed of it. We grasp for control and we feel beyond our, I think Andy Colbert calls it the window of tolerance. We feel like we need to, like we're beyond the pale and we have to like pull it back in and, you know, and at the same time, just that good news of grace to not feel like, how could you try to hold your life together in this broken world, instead just feeling God's
exactly.
presence where he's like, no, I got it. I came into the broken world and I knew you couldn't. Like God's not like, how could you?
Yeah.
You know, he gets it.
Yeah. And that like the fact that Jesus came reminds us that whatever situation you're agonizing over and that you want to heal and you want to fix, the fact that Jesus came means that God is actually even more committed to healing that situation than even you are.
Yeah.
And that is such good news.
Oh, such good news. So encouraging to imagine that God knows that in fact we can't and that he can.
Uh-huh.
Like that's really relieving in my temptation towards this. I mean, I know how real this is, you know, personally, and how much people in my life also struggle with this very real thing. And so, you know, when you think about how you would say, you know, because you had heard it said, it sounds like remind me, what was the phrase you said? You'd heard it said, the
God
control,
is in control.
God is in control. Mm-hmm. You know, so what would you say if you had anything to say about that still? Mm-hmm. And then what would you say, but I tell you, in response to that?
That's a good question, because it is true. I think the problem with it is the way we turn it into a truism.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
That it's sort of this like escape hatch from bearing into, you know, either faith or, you know, what's going on in the world. And so, you know, I want to say, like, it is true that God is in control, but maybe the qualification that I would add to that is that the follow-up is not simply God is in control and so just like let go and let God, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the go, right? Just fully get your, just drop out of it, or like, why are you being so controlling? Remove yourself from the situation. Just let go.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, God is in control is the answer in some ways to the false gospel of our own control, and to remember that God isn't simply asking you to throw up your hands and do nothing. He actually instills in us profound influence and power. And we didn't even get into actually that part of the conversation that when we look at Genesis 1 and 2, we see Adam and Eve, they're not just laying down, doing nothing. Like God has commissioned them to exercise dominion over creation. There's so much influence that God has given us. He just hasn't given us control. And so the task then is to put down the power that God has not given us, to pick up the power that he has. So I'm really like not answering your question at all.
No, it's great. I'm tracking. I'm with you. So.
But I'm giving thoughts. I'm giving thoughts. Yeah. Lots of thoughts.
Well, the thoughts are helpful. And I think what I hear you saying in many ways is there's this release of control in the taking it apart from God sort of way. This, that the very problem, the very thing that got us into trouble is how we try to solve the problem, which is like taking control. God's given us all this beautiful dominion, and then we take control, and then it caused a muck. It made this big mess known as broken humanity. And then we grabbed our reaction is to try to do the same thing to solve the problem, is something that I very much hear. And yet I hear this deep call to faith, this call to residing in, yes, how God is in control, but God is not controlling. That there's this invitation to use our free will in a way that really is really that builds faith and doesn't destroy relationship. And so, you know, that's what I hear.
There you go. You got me across the finish line.
Hey,
there
you're good. Yeah. No, Sharon, it is fantastic to get to have spent time with you and to get to hear more of your own story, your own journey. And I love that this isn't just ideas you're putting on paper, but these are, or, you know, calls to the church, but that this is part of your own transformation and, you know, your own journey in your marriage and in your life and in parenting. And I'm walking away super convicted about all the ways that God is calling me to, you know, pay the cost of control in a good way and not in a bad way. And so thank you for being on the show. And, you know, how if folks want to find you and want to learn more about, you know, what you guys are doing at Bright City or even in your own ministry, your own as an author and a pastor, where would they find you?
I am most active on Instagram. So just Sharon H. Miller. That's where I am.
And then you have a podcast too, right? You have the Resilient Pastor podcast with friends of ours.
Yeah, with Glenn Packiam and Rich Velotis. And we have a lot of fun. The amount of recording that we have to cut because we're just giggling.
Perfect.
They're very fun. So yeah, we have a good time.
Great. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and I look forward to the next time. So thank you.